Howdy, neighbors. Welcome to another Ag Perspectives podcast. Today, our guest is Erin Boyer. She's the Vice President for Economic Analysis for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Today, Erin and I are going to do a deep dive into the latest March numbers, March 22 numbers for beef exports, and they're pretty good. We'll get into that today with Erin here in just a moment.
Stop changing fly control products each season and turn to Altacid IGR for horn fly specific control year after year. This IGR passes through cattle and into manure where horn flies lay eggs, preventing adult flies that interfere with cattle health and profitability. With this premixed feed through, you won't be measuring fly control into cattle minerals, you'll be measuring added weight gains. With no known resistance and still only 2 to 3 cents per head per day, make Altacid IGR the only choice for your mineral supplement. Contact your feed dealer today or go to altacidigr.com.
Talking with Erin Boyer, first, of course, from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Latest numbers, I guess the March numbers that we've got, Erin, out for beef, for pork, for lamb. Beef numbers, they just continue to march on, it seems like. It's amazing to me. But tell me about these numbers.
Yes, indeed. Beef remained really impressive. So it was a new value record and over $1 billion shipped out again in March. And that was on a value basis up by a third year on year. So for a little bit of context, we've seen those beef prices, including for the export items, accelerate from about April, May a year ago. So we're going to get into more challenging year on year comparisons, especially from the middle of this year. But yes, every month continues to be impressive, and it's exporting a larger share of production and pretty widespread growth. So your big Asian markets continue to lead, and you had Korea up 9% in the first quarter on volume, China, including Hong Kong, up 36% again. So those continue to be big gainers. But then you have kind of widespread growth. Middle East is coming back in on both variety meats and muscle cuts. Taiwan up 47%, a huge start into that market. And then in the islands, in the Caribbean and the Dominican Republic, we're seeing some food service coming back in there. They were up 41%. And Central America has been really strong on both beef and pork, and they continued to grow. So those beef volumes into Central America up 14%. And we're even starting to see some recovery into Europe. We still have some kind of SPS challenges in there, but those volumes rebounded from a real low level a year ago, up 86%. So kind of a mix of growth, which is always good to see.
Broad base for sure.
Yep.
The one thing that kind of jumped out, one of those, the sub headlines you had in the release, the extensive release on the website, that Korea is now our number one destination for U.S. beef in this latest month. That's a kind of a mile marker, isn't it? Milestone?
For sure. And Korea had, if we just look at muscle cuts, Korea had been number one for a bit last year, and Japan still takes so many tongues. And skirts and hangers, which sometimes get categorized as variety meats, Japan had still been holding number one when you add everything together. But yes, for Q1, Korea came ahead for everything, beef and variety meats, to be our number one destination. And that market is just incredible. And I call it my model market because we've watched it go from, candlelight vigils in the street protesting U.S. beef to world-class beef. And that's where we are today. And just watching it transition from a real thin slice market to steaks. And this has been, over the years, and it's not new at this point, but that continues to grow. And so the success we've seen in teaching the retailers, the chefs, and the consumers how to consume, larger cuts of U.S. beef in a whole new range of available specifications and hitting on the convenience aspects, all of this, health, everything. And to see the growth through the pandemic, it's kind of what we saw in this market domestically, but it's just been tremendous.
For China, Hong Kong, I know this has been a crazy market. I mean, there's such growth in 2021, but we are getting, a little bit of COVID headwind right now in China.
Yes, indeed. And this market, we are still optimistic for the year. We've maybe pulled back our growth for the entire year a bit, given the situation mostly in Shanghai, but in other cities, and then, of course, concerns about Beijing. But yes, I mean, the current situation, we can't really downplay its significance. Most of the U.S. beef had been going into that Shanghai port. And we know that moving products out of port and just trucking out of the region, plus some restrictions even on cold storages, especially if there's a COVID case, there's big challenges for moving product, not to mention demand impacts, you know, with restrictions on food service. But still, this can't last forever. And we know there's still the demand in that market. We know as more U.S. companies, you know, get involved in the business, there's still big growth potential. U.S. beef is now the biggest grain-fed supplier into that China market. So we surpassed Australia all the way back late in 2020. And Australia, of course, you know, has had smaller supplies. So that alternating cycle didn't hurt, but really just the gains in the phase one agreement, it's just been growth ever since. And for China, on a balance sheet, the only constraint there is just supply availability from the world, not just the U.S. I mean, there's just kind of unimaginable demand, again, just on the balance sheet basis. And knowing that China is fairly limited on what they can produce domestically on, especially on a product like beef, which is, you know, so extensively, or should be such so extensively raised. So yes, headwinds at the moment, although it's not really showing up in the data, we know it's challenging in the market, but still we see growth for the year on a whole as things start to hopefully normalize in China.
I guess the thing about China is that they were already taking a lot of beef from the market, the world market, before they really started turning to us after that phase one trade deal, and the phytosanitary obstacles were taken care of. This is a market that, as you mentioned, has a tremendous amount of potential, but in a lot of cases, we're starting to probably do what we did with the Aussies, as far as we're kind of displacing a lot of these folks as they like our grain-fed beef.
Yes, to some degree. Although, you know, when we dive into those Australian numbers, their grain-fed shipments specifically last year were only down about 2%. So we have just seen huge growth, and it just kind of speaks to the potential in the market in China, because actually that total grain-fed number into China has been growing. It now accounts for probably over 10% of their total imports. And again, we're the biggest supplier in that grain-fed category. But of their overall total imports of all beef, grain and grass-fed, we're right around 6% of China's import volume. So they're still heavily reliant on South America for that mostly grass-fed product. And then in grain-fed, Australia's been able to hold kind of they're not at their peak, but at year-on-year volumes. And they've just really decreased on the grass-fed side as they've been up against South American competition. Australia's had plants suspended, and they just haven't had the grass-fed supplies because they've been in such intensive herd rebuilding down there with the strong improvement in their grazing conditions.
I know that one of the bullet points you've got, you kind of have been keeping up with those beef variety meats. You mentioned a situation with Japan still, you know, taking quite a bit of that from a product from us. But we've got several countries that have really helped us move that needle on that particular segment of the market.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, on variety meats, a big part of the constraint there has just been labor availability in our plants. So we know for both beef and pork that the variety meat demand in the international markets is there. And we hear from all of our staff around the world that they just can't get, you know, as much product as they would like. And that situation continues. It's improved. The labor situation in the plants has improved, but to be able to capture package produce these variety meats for export, it does take additional labor. And I know I've heard from the exporters that they're still, you know, leaving money on the table because they just don't have the manpower to pack everything for export. And then what's harder to quantify is we know that the pet food demand in our U.S. market has been really strong. And so for those who can send those variety meat items into the pet food channel, which not everyone can, but for those that can, that's been a high value alternative as well. So, you know, through all of this, we've seen really strong prices for these variety meats. And that unit value, if you will, keeps increasing. So, for example, the March variety meat volume was down slightly year on year, but that value was sharply higher because they're still paying up to get what product they can get. No, I was just going to say, and yes, that Middle East, that Egypt market has been coming back in the first quarter as well, which is heavily on the liver side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One other thing. I know that you, on a regular basis, you've done this for years. You've actually done the computations to show the value per head back to the U.S. cattle industry. And that number just continues to amaze. It keeps creeping up.
Yes, indeed. So for March, the beef and variety meat export value per head of fed slaughter, so just on that steer and heifer slaughter, averaged $472.73 a head. So that was up 36%, or about $127 a head more than the year ago comparison. And then for that first quarter, it averaged $474.10, up 41%, or an increase of $138.65 per head. And so, yes, we're exporting a larger share of production. So first quarter, we exported 12.5% of total beef cut production and 14.7% when you add in those variety meats. And so we've been exporting essentially at a new record level of production, but at these sharply higher prices. So what that tells you is that strong demand internationally. And, you know, that's part of that value that China brings, because it was such a big added demand going from, you know, virtually nothing to over 40,000 tons then that first year after the phase one to 180,000 tons last year. And so as Joel Haggard and Hong Kong says, you know, what market goes from like nothing to 180,000 tons or $1.6 billion in like a span of less than 2 years. Mm. And so that bid from China helped stimulate, you know, everyone else to have to pay up. So the Korean importer wanted to make sure he got the product. Even Japan, who generally resists price increases, deflationary economy, right? They had to pay up just to get the product. So it moved the needle in all the markets as there was that added competition, especially for those Asia cuts. So yeah, that demand momentum really piled on the values.
Wow, that's incredible. I know that I remember the, I'm not sure who was the credited with quote, saying this, but I remember, you know, one of anything to the world's most populous nation can add up to quite a bit. And we've proven that with beef for sure.
Yeah, I feel like we felt like we were saying that for a long time, and then it actually became very real. And on the corn side too, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been quite amazing. And I think, I mean, with that, USMEF has been on the ground that whole time while we were out from BSE. We were there still plowing the ground, still marketing U.S. pork. So when the phase one was implemented, you know, we were full on ready to rock and roll, already had the way kind of paved and just hit the ground running. So our team there has been exceptional, of course.
Right. Looking ahead. In other words, you mentioned some headwinds, some tough comparisons out there by summertime. What is the outlook at this point for 2022 overall?
Yeah, I find myself very torn and kind of going back and forth on this. I mean, it's extremely difficult because every variable feels like it's on the move right now and really hard to kind of pin down. And that even applies to our domestic situation, which we can usually kind of pencil that in the balance sheet pretty firmly. But heavy female liquidation right now, that's adding to our beef supplies overall. And so even as I look ahead, you know, the question of how much production might decline this year, probably not that much, but that gets you into even tighter supplies next year and the next year. So looking ahead, honestly, our biggest constraint is kind of supply side, what we do as far as, you know, losing a significant share of our beef cow factory right now and heifers to market as well. Knowing that puts us in a supply hole, you know, who's going to bid the most to get that product? And that gets to be really challenging. But we also know the economic headwinds, the impact of inflation. So looking at which consumers spend the biggest share of their expenditures on food and kind of keeping that in mind of who's going to get hit the hardest with inflation. And then you have the dramatically weaker Japanese yen. You have the Korean won kind of following it down. And so the currency side is a bit troubling too, or at least a headwind. But kind of figuring all of this in, we still have U.S. beef exports for just muscle cuts up somewhere around 3-3.5% for this year. And when we add in those variety meats, because we are able to capture some more of them now, and we have that still strong demand. That puts us up over 4% to about 1.5 million tons of beef exports for this year. And then on a value basis, we're looking at about $11.6 billion. That's a 10% increase. We still have inflation or higher prices factored in for the year on average, but we're actually looking at some moderation in that price growth when you dive into the monthly estimates compared to, you know, seeing like constant price increases from about April of last year. So we are factoring in some, I would say, more normalization than going backwards on price, but you know, you just can't sustain that continued price growth, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Aaron. Aaron Boyer, who's Vice President for Economic Analysis for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.